I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
Welcome to Prattleworld. I'm your host, the ever-amazing, ever-spectacular Spider Dan. And in this podcast, I spotlight entertainment's best-kept secrets that a mainstream audience may find boring. And welcome to the very first edition of a Western Month. You guys voted for it, and you've got it. So we are going to be discussing this month everything within the Western genre that makes it so loved, so treasured, and so honored as a genre as it is. You know, it's had its ups and downs and its twists and turns. You've got your weird Westerns, your revisionist Westerns, your acid Westerns. You've got all different types of Westerns. So we're just celebrating all those kind of characters, movies, everything I can think of, potentially. So this is the very first edition. I hope you guys have been looking forward to this, because I know I have. I'm a big fan of the genre. You name it, Wild Bunch, Good, the Bad, the Ugly. You name any Western movie, and I've got a bit of a soft spot for it, or going into it. But we are going to look at all different types and different genres within the Western genre, but the subgenres rather. But we are still going to maintain the kind of traditional Western. I don't want to go too crazy. We're not going to go really out there with, you know, space Westerns, or, you know, futuristic Westerns, or weird Westerns, or horror. I'm just going to kind of stick to fairly traditional kind of Western tropes and ideas and things in the coming months. So I've got a lot of guests lined up. I think it's going to be a really good theme month. So let's begin. Initially, when I was kind of crafting the month itself and what I was going to include, and, you know, some of these things kind of can change and shift, and some of them don't always stay, you know, things don't always go to plan, guests can drop out, you know, things change. And with the, I was going to do a top five Jonah Hex stories, so one of my favorite kind of Western characters, especially in comics, great, grim, tough, hard, you know, morally ambiguous kind of character, morally grey, absolutely fascinating. I've not even seen the movie, so I can't even comment on that, but I remember seeing the trailer and got turned off it almost immediately. But that's fine. But I've been really digging into the comics. The comics are really, really good. Especially stuff by Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray. Absolutely fantastic stuff. Really, really good. Maybe I'll get to it at some point, but because of the kind of current climate with the Black Lives Matter and stuff, I felt it was a little inappropriate or ill-advised to celebrate a character who, though never being depicted as racist or having those kind of that kind of hatred of any race, he does wear a Confederate uniform. He did fight for the South, and obviously, you know, the Dixie flag and everything else, all that kind of, there is kind of a lot of kind of heavy racist connotations. And I didn't want to, you know, trigger anybody or upset anybody potentially with that stuff. So I decided not to do that. I decided not to go with that. Again, I like the character. Not long after I made that decision, I put it on my social media. I was like, because I was kind of sort of hinting that I was going to do a Jonah Hex themed something. I would have done this, but I think right now is not the right time. So I may well come back to it, maybe at another point. But again, the character has never been written as racist, and there's, you know, there's lots of images I can pull up, and you know, it never really categorically says why he wears the Confederate uniform, but from a lot of the dialogue in his books, it was never about race for him. It was basically about belonging to the South. He was sold into slavery in
to Native Americans by his dad, all that sort of stuff. But yeah, so I decided to look at another comic, which I'm really glad I did, because this is superb, brilliant crossover comic. I love a good, you know me, I love a good crossover. You know, characters that don't usually meet, you know, bumping into each other, comparing their differences and their similarities, you know, swapping things over, you know, all sorts of that kind of stuff. It always kind of gets my juices going, and the possibilities are kind of endless in that regard. We're going to look today at Django Zorro. So this is a crossover between the character Django from Django Unchained, the Quentin Tarantino movie, about the Django Freeman, who starts off as a slave and is freed and becomes a bounty hunter with, I think it's Dr. Dwight Schultz, I want to say. I think that's the character's name. And if you've seen the movie, you know kind of how it plays out. I won't spoil it too much here, but this is the official sequel. This is currently the official sequel to this movie. Now, funnily enough, when I decided to do this, like within days, it was announced that screenwriters were writing an adaptation of this very story. So it's really quite exciting. What's even more kind of wonderful about it is that Quentin Tarantino, you know, supervised the story. He added his elements, he added his ideas. Matt Wagner, who's a comic book writer of, you know, Grendel, Mage, Batman books, Trinity, you name it, he's done pretty much everything. And he's a fantastic artist, The Shadow he's done. So he recently, for Dynamite Comics, reimagined the origin of Zorro, kind of give it a, you know, we get a new origin for Batman and Superman every day of the week, so why not Zorro? And he kind of modernized it in a way. It's still very much set in the Wild West and, you know, has all those kind of tropes that we would expect from a Western and a swashbuckling adventures of Zorro, you know, the fox, El Zorro. And he gives it a lot more layers, a lot more kind of character and some really interesting stuff. So I hadn't read any of the Zorro stuff by Matt Wagner prior to this, but I have now gone back and started reading Zorro Year One, which is really, really good as well. It's just high caliber work. Matt Wagner doesn't draw it himself, so I'm always a little disappointed when he doesn't draw, because I love his work. But I think it's Franco Francavilla in that. But in this, it is Esteve Poles. I'm probably butchering that. Or Esteve Poles, perhaps. So Quentin Tarantino, Matt Wagner, and Esteve Poles all working on this book. And this is a crossover between two companies as well. So this is an intercompany crossover, which is very, very rare, actually. Doesn't happen as often. Marvel basically don't do these anymore. DC do, Vertigo do, you know, IDW love them. IDW owns a lot of stuff that they crossover genuinely anyway. I always love when they do it, so I'm always well up for it. I'm like, because there's a Transformers, it might already have fully come out now, but there's a Transformers and Terminators comic, which I'm up for reading. Sounds amazing. Bring that on. But yeah, so let's crack on anyway to the story itself. So the timelines of Django and Zorro don't really match up that perfectly. So it's not a young Zorro we see. This is an aged Zorro. This is a kind of, imagine kind of Anthony Hopkins in The Mask of Zorro with Antonio Banderas and Catherine Zeta-Jones. If you can kind of picture his character, Anthony Hopkins, original Zorro, aged, wants to kind of pass the mantle on, sort of. It's kind of that kind of character that we're seeing. Don Diego de la Vega is a really quite a fascinating character, and, you know, went on to inspire Batman and a lot of other kind of characters of that kind of comic book pulp-esque era. And it's quite interesting because he plays this kind of flamboyant, foppish kind of dandy. This is his character. This is his, you know, this is his Bruce Wayne, you know, to Batman, to Bruce Wayne, like Bruce Wayne is the mask. You know, that's the false face that Batman wears. The true face of Batman is in the cowl. And it's almost a bit of that, but in a way that's, Tarantino describes it in the introduction, it's not an affectation. It is who he is. He just kind of plays up to that, you know, that posh kind of tough dandy persona, this cowardly flamboyant, you know, Richmond, this kind of caballero Spanish nobleman, this kind of character he plays, and he's, you know, flamboyantly dressed, and it's quite interesting to see that, and to see him in these kind of very serious, very macho, very toxic male environments where he's throwing his hanky about, and you know speaking Spanish, and the, you know, when he's like, they're like, we will absolutely speak no Spanish at this table, you know, he's doing all that, and it's a really fun character, and it really does kind of juxtapose the way Django is. Django is very, like, he's very straightforward, no nonsense, you know, straight to the point, you know, why do we have to do all this plotting and planning subterfuge, which, you know, El Zorro is, like his namesake, very crafty, like a fox, and Django is the exact opposite of that. It's like, why don't we just shoot him straight in the head? Job done. End of, you know, but El Zorro is not like that. He likes to play the game and to kind of make the villains, you know, undo themselves, come to their own, kind of, you know, hoist their own petard, so to speak. So yeah, it's really interesting to see the two characters meet. It starts off with Django kind of walks up to the very fancy, very expensive looking carriage that Don Diego de la Vega has as a carriage, and his mute kind of, basically Zorro has kind of an Alfred type. He's called Bernardo. He's a Native American. He grew up with, very close, taught him everything he learnt and respects him. He's a mute. I learnt in Zorro Year One that he's a mute because Zorro's father was away, Diego's father was away, and pirates attacked their home and they killed. So Zorro in this version as well is part Native American as well. His mother is a Native American kind of warrior woman, and his father is this caballero kind of Spanish nobleman. And during this attack, you know, the mother of Zorro is defending herself and, you know, picks up like a hatchet and all that sort of tomahawk and all that stuff, and is kicking some serious ass. But Bernardo's mum tells him to promise her to always be quiet no matter what happens. Always be quiet, never speak until I say. These men come in and they basically assault her and kill her in very brutal fashion, and Bernardo watches the whole thing, and because he made that promise, he never speaks again. A lot of people assume he's a deaf mute, but actually he's just mute, and, you know, it's almost like it's out of respect for his dead mother. So he's a really fascinating character as well, Bernardo, in his own right, and it's quite interesting to see his dialogue, or lack thereof, with Django. But it's, yeah, it's really, really interesting. But yeah, Django comes up to this carriage, he's like, I need a ride, my horse is lame, da 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 da. They start having a chat. They share a good, you know, Don Diego de la Vega loves a good cucumber sandwich, so, you know, shares one with Django, and Django is kind of he's playing a bit of a game. So what transpires is that Django's actually knows this carriage would be a target for men he is after as a bounty hunter, so his marks are there, and obviously they rock up to the carriage, try to rob it, and Django's there, just bam 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 bam, amazing shot that he is, kills them all dead, and that's it, and he wants to collect the bounty, so he's going to the next town to collect the bounty, and on the way Zorro says, can I hire you? I need some help. I need a bodyguard. It's like, well, I'm a bounty hunter. I'm not really a bodyguard. It's not really what I do. It's out of my comfort zone. But yeah, so he agrees, because he basically goes, I've got gold. And like, gold? And he's like, yep, I could do with some money for good old Brunhilde. Brunhilde's not in this adventure. She's kind of off somewhere, kind of trying to sort their lives out and kind of put the house together, I think, or some land that they've bought together. But yeah, Django could always do with some more money. So they hire him. And then they rock up to this town. And all the while, like, Django isn't like, though he's a bit more kind of, you know, rough-edged and kind of blunt with his kind of the way he acts and responds to situations, he's still very intelligent. He knows there's something not quite right about Don Diego de la Vega. He thinks is not, you know, there's something he's not quite being 100% honest with, or, you know, isn't telling him the whole story. So yeah, there's a bit in the town where they start basically They start, these a group of kind of really thug-like criminals start making fun of Diego and saying he's too flamboyant and too camp. And then Diego just kicks their ass seriously, like takes them all out, gets a sword, and leaves the mark of Zorro on one of their hands. And that's kind of as the first issue ends. Great opening. What I love about this is all the interaction with... I could just have done with more in this whole story, just more interaction with Zorro and Django. You know, it's gold. It's absolute gold. Every time they're in the room together, every time they're discussing, every time they're debating their, you know, their methods and modus operandi and how they approach things, it's really fascinating. And they respect each other. There's this huge mutual respect for each other. Diego kind of keeps the secret for, tries to keep the secret, but again, he's getting old in his ways and can't always be the best and the most secretive. But again, it's the kind of the flamboyancy of him kind of, and the, it kind of comes out in all of his interactions with anybody, really. But the main issue I have with this story, like, it's all great, some great action, some great set pieces, the dialogue is so good. Again, there's, if you're uncomfortable with it, there is a few kind of, if you're familiar with Django, there's a fair amount of kind of racial slurs and phrases that would have been used at the time. If you're easily offended by that, I probably wouldn't pick up this book, but then again, you probably wouldn't have watched Django, so I imagine you wouldn't pick up this book, but there you have it. But the issue I have with the book is mostly the villain, and he's known as the Archduke of Arizona. So he is actually based on a real guy. He's based on a guy named James Redus, who was kind of a master forger. And it's kind of almost a retelling of that story. It's a fictional story that they're telling, but it's very, very close to what James Redus back in the day did. He basically tried to make Arizona into kind of a sovereign state. And this actually inspired a film with Vincent Price called The Baron of Arizona. And it just, the story itself, it kind of just showcases, it takes him like years and years. He meets this young girl, and then he basically goes to this kind of monastery and goes to these other places and kind of crafts out evidence that this massive piece of land always belonged to this young girl. It's written in documents. He goes to this monastery. He lives in this monastery for like 5 years just so he can get access to these kind of documents so he can rewrite them and forge the information he needs to be able to just get, basically claim this land. And then he goes and he marries this young girl, and the son was always in love with this young girl, even though she's been renamed, and, you know, that's just whole part of the plan. You know, and as interesting as that sounds, it's not as interesting as it should be on the page. It really... I was like, after this great introduction of the two characters meeting and everything, I was like, right, give me some more of this, yes! But the second issue is just a whole issue of... basically his backstory, and it's just not as interesting as I would want it to be. I understand I'm not the very au fait or familiar with like Zorro's rogues gallery, even if he has one specifically, or like a main adversary, an arch villain. But this one, yeah, he's generally just like an evil landowner. There's not really that much more to him. He's a white guy, and even though he takes his you know, title and his class and everything from this young girl who doesn't really know much. You know, he refuses for her to speak Spanish in the house, things like that. But he's basically using, in this, the plot he has is basically there's a lot of silver, I think, in the area, and he wants to make, he's making a mine and he's kind of getting all the silver out, but he's also creating a railroad because he thinks that Arizona will eventually become part of the United States because it currently isn't. And Zorro has heard of this and is unsure. And I'm not sure, I can't remember how Zorro kind of finds out, but I think there's something, maybe a letter gets sent or who knows. I can't really remember how he discovers that there is a forgery, that it's fake. But he seems to know everything. But Zorro is a very intelligent guy, so... but maybe I could have done with how did he figure it out? How did that message get passed on? Maybe it says it in the book and I've just forgot. That is really my only gripe with this book. I do love when again, just anytime Django are together, Django and Zorro are together, it's just perfection as kind of crossover comics go. This is, you know, every kind of world's finest comic. Every time, you know, if we got a world's finest movie, that's what it would be, and that's what you would want from it, you know, or a Daredevil and Spider-Man. You would want the differences, but then you would want the similarities as well to be brought to the fore in those kind of sweet, kind of slow character moments. But then you also want the cool kick-assery and stuff. And you get that in all of this. But yeah, I like the kind of the dripping in of the Zorro mythos throughout. Because I'll be honest, if you're coming into Zorro very, you know, you don't really know much about him at all, I think this will tease you enough that you might be interested in reading the other Matt Wagner stuff. Because I'm definitely more interested now, and I'd like to read a bit more of his take on Zorro and those adventures. But I think you kind of have to come in. It's tricky because you kind of don't need the backstory, because it doesn't give you a full backstory. It doesn't go, this is what happened to Django in the film, this is what previously happened to Zorro. You don't get like a previously on X-Men. It's just crack on. And if you pick up little bits of character, a bit of, you know, there's a flashback with Dwight Schultz and various other kind of characters, but you don't need it. But if you do want it, I would recommend going watch the film or reading a bit more of Matt Wagner's Zorro. It's quite a fascinating read regardless. You can read this in one sitting. Genuinely, I just flicked through it. I was done in like an hour at most. It's just a fun read. It just flies by. It's a great kind of adventure. It's quite interesting as well. Now, Reginald Hudlin, who you might know from kind of, he was like the writer and director of House Party and Eddie Murphy's Boomerang. He produced Django as well. And he also wrote an amazing run on Marvel's Black Panther. Highly recommend reading that, because it is just one of the best runs on that character you will find. It's famously where Black Panther and Storm married. That's one of the big parts of that run, and it just, you know, just adds so much like great stuff to the character that was already there, but he just kind of, you know, cherry picked it, added what he needed to. It's a great run. But he came up with the idea, and he was kind of, because he works at Dynamite, works in association with Dynamite, and he knows Tarantino. He said, what do you think of this? What do you think of this idea? And he loved it. Tarantino loved the idea of taking the greatest kind of Spanish, Mexican, Western hero and teaming it with, you know, probably the most famous kind of black Western hero there is as well. You know, I think it's really good to see that the West was won by people that were not white. You know, there was like these characters out there that were doing the right thing in this harsh, horrific time. And it's amazing to see like Zorro's kind of inspirational speeches and these kind of moments where he inspires the native slaves to kind of rise up and fight back. It even inspires Django. Like, he's a guy who literally says, I'm not a hero. I'm not this person that I do it for the money. Like, yeah, there's some bastards need to die, but I'm more so for the money. But again, like, they influence each other in great ways. So, you know, Zorro's like, yeah, maybe I should be a bit more straightforward, and Django brings him down to earth, because all this kind of like, he hangs about with all the toffs and the elite, this like white elite of America, you know, sometimes he needs to be brought back down to earth. And that's exactly what Django does. But then Django kind of, you know, needs to look outside of himself and Brunhilde and look at, you know, what's happening. So, and he does. My God, he gets so inspired. He drives a train directly into this mining camp, where they're building the railroad and they're doing the mining and everything, to free all the slaves. Ends up almost killing himself driving this train. Some amazing stuff, and the artwork is really good. It's really effective. It's just what you need. It's kind of rough, ready, but it's also, it does have an air of beauty. And, you know, seeing Zorro kind of rise up on his horse, and he's got the whip going and everything, you know, the silhouette and all the explosions going off. It's really quite a book. It's available digitally as well on Comixology. You can get it physically. You get the single issues as well, eBay or Amazon. Same as usual. But it's such a great book. But I just really have to... Again, it's like... Again, the issue I have is the villain. The villain is not as interesting or as fascinating as I think he could have been. Again, I understand he's based on a real person and that's quite an interesting story. But I think there could have been more elements, or you could have spread that throughout the seven issues. I think it's seven issues, as opposed to having one big block of him. He goes to the monastery, he forges this, he writes on a big rock wall that, you know, I am entitled to this land. You know, a full issue of that was just a bit much for me. Again, I would have just cherry-picked maybe some flashbacks throughout. That's, again, that's more of a structural story thing for me. Even at the end, the comeuppance for the Archduke does not come at the hands of Zorro, does not come at the hands of Django, which, again, I felt it was disappointing after all this. And I won't spoil, again, I don't want to spoil too much because it's a really good book and I want everybody to go out and read it. Some amazing moments as well, like where Django has to impersonate Zorro, so he has to wear all the black, and there's a bit where De La Vega's like, do you know how to use a whip? And he's like, I'm familiar with whips, and he just like cracks it and like takes off an entire curtain rail, and he's like, yeah, that's pretty good, but watch this. And he like Zorro cracks his whip three times and takes out each candle, like three candles on a little stand. And there's a bit where like Django and Zorro are comparing their blade to their gun, and he's like, I don't know why you have a gun, you know, you can miss and you need to reload and stuff. And he was like, you know, your accuracy can be poor. And he's like, and he just shoots straight, and he's just like, you've got a problem with accuracy. And he's like, fair enough, but I will say this, I'll never have to reload my sword because my blade and my whip are always ready. So yeah, and it's just a fun book, and it's kind of a great little marrying of those two worlds, like the kind of old west of the swashbuckling adventurer with this kind of Django's kind of take where it's a bit more dark and disturbing and kind of violent, very violent, because there's a section where Django just goes apeshit with his guns and basically massacres all the slave drivers, and Zorro's like, we are trying to, you know, figure out this plot and get the evidence we need, and this, you know, I told you to be like low profile and you've just massacred. And he was like, you've got your way, I've got mine, that is just the way we work. But it's such a fun read, and I highly, highly recommend this book. Get out and read it if you can get hold of it. It's fantastic. Just such, it's quite a straightforward story, so it's not something I really want to spoil too much without telling a lot of it. I want to save the rest of those kind of cool little moments for you. But it's a fantastic read. Some great characters, some great writing. Again, the only issue I have is the villain. You might disagree, that's fair. But again, that's a very minor part of this story. For me, the interaction between Zorro and Django is just it is dynamite, if you will. So couldn't say anything else bad about it, really. It's just a great crossover comic. It's a great intercompany crossover. It's just a great comic in general. Quality comic book talent, quality filmmaking talent. You know, Reginald Hudlin's involved as well. The artist, again, fantastic work. I really like his kind of rough yet beautiful kind of line work. It's really, really good. And the lighting's really good when they shift the colors. And you can really tell, like, I love it when Diego drops out of character when he sees something really horrific. There's a scene where one of the native slaves gets his leg blown off, and he's like, these people, that man's life is ruined and these people don't even care. Like, he totally drops that effort, that kind of like, oh, I'm a fop, oh, I'm a dandy, oh, I'm a coward, oh, Zorro, oh no, you know, all this. He just drops it solid and just like, this is wrong, this is evil. And I think that's what's so great about that character. And about, they do have their differences, Django and Zorro, but again, they're on the same side. They're fighting for the same thing, you know, and they do it in their own ways. And that's what makes the book. And it just makes it an excellent team-up book and an excellent book about, you know, Westerns and the kind of the difference between those kind of classic Zorro movies and what we get nowadays, what we get with Django. Very, very different tonally, like absolute opposites. But in the within this structure and within the story and with Matt Wagner behind it, behind that kind of that framework, he's managed to kind of blend them quite seamlessly together. And, you know, some people might think it's quite a ridiculous premise, like Django teaming up with Zorro, but it absolutely 100% works. This is gold. Again, I'd probably give it like 4.5 stars. Great, 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 great stuff. Again, it's up there with some of my favorite crossover comics. Again, I've talked about crossover comics before and how much I enjoy them. So if this is your, you know, cup of tea, if you're into Westerns, you like Django or you like Zorro, either or, give it a go. It's a fantastic read. Well, thank you very much, guys. This has been our very first edition. So next week, me and Dennis will be looking... Dennis is back, surprise, surprise. We're going to be looking at a Clint Eastwood film, a revisionist Western known as High Plains Drifter. So a stranger comes into town, nameless stranger. And he's certainly not the hero of this story, but more on that in the next podcast. So before we go, guys, I'm just going to tell you where you can find me. So I'm on Facebook. It's at Secret Balls on Facebook. Twitter, it's at Dan_Balls. Instagram, Spider Dan Secret Balls, all one word. And the podcast is available on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, and many, many more. And if you'd like to donate towards the podcast, you can buy me a coffee at ko-fi.com/SpiderDanTheSecretBalls. And don't forget to use the hashtag #PrepareForPrattle when you interact with us. Thank you very much for your time. And I will ride out now into the sunset, as I always do.